Hello, and welcome to Securing Sexuality, the podcast where we discuss the intersection of intimacy
and information security. I'm Wolf Gorlick.
He's a hacker, and I'm Stephanie Gorlick.
She is a sex therapist, and together we're going to discuss what safe sex looks like in a digital age.
And baby, it's my favorite time of year.
When you get presents?
I mean, yes, but that happens a couple times a year. There's Valentine's Day and our anniversary. And sweetest day. So, I mean, I get presents throughout the year. This only happens once a year.
I was going to say we get to get dressed up, but that happens multiple times a year, too.
Never turn down a chance to get dressed up.
Okay, what is your favorite time of year?
It is the Pornhub Year in Review, where sex therapists everywhere learn about the hot new trends in sexual search terms and our clients are looking for and talking about and thinking about. Admittedly, it's only one website, but it's one of the biggest websites, and they do a fabulous, fascinating job every year of like data analysis and looking at what people have been looking at over the last year. And I feel like this is a good time to, you know, content warning for this episode, friends listening to us. We're talking about trends on Pornhub. A certain degree of, you know, keep your kids away from this episode should be, you know, just implied, but I'm gonna state it overtly. We want enthusiastic, ongoing consent with Securing Sexuality. So if you're not interested in hearing about people's porn usage, maybe skip this one. And definitely, you know, make sure that you're in a private place before Wolf and I dive into this fascinating set of data that Pornhub just released.
Well, all right. So I appreciate the content warning, but I've got to ask you, we are Securing Sexuality, the intersection of technology and intimacy. What, how can I say this? Why are we talking about porn?
Because the consumption of porn happens primarily online these days. The vast majority of people are not buying the, you know, foil-wrapped magazines at 7-Eleven. They are watching their erotica, reading, viewing, listening to their erotica online. And how they're doing that, where they're doing that, and what they're looking at while they do that, I feel like is directly relevant to our work. Because a lot of people are really, really embarrassed about their erotica consumption. And actually, you and I have encountered situations where, you know, people are blackmailed, right? They're scammed. They'll get a virus on their computer that locks up their computer and it says, like, we know what you've been doing. And if you don't pay us, we're going to tell everybody in your contacts list exactly what you've been looking at when you're watching porn alone. So what people do online, what they're curious about, where they're going on the internet, these are things that people have a lot of big feelings about, both, you know, sexy feelings and shameful and scared feelings. And it's all online these days. I don't think you can separate this topic from technology.
You know, I'm surprised people aren't going to the theaters. Like, that was the way people were intended to consume adult content. You go to a theater, you pay your ticket like everyone else, but no, now it's online. And what, on phones or computers, or do we know?
We do know, actually. The vast majority of Pornhub users are scrolling on their phones. But what I thought was interesting as a non-gamer type person was that a decent number of people are doing it from their game consoles. Their PlayStations are a popular point of access for online content. And I mean, I get it. Like, logically, it makes sense. My kid plays streaming games, so I'm aware that video games connect to the internet. But I hadn't really thought about PlayStation as like a web browser. I don't think it had ever occurred to me that you could access Pornhub from a game console before looking at the year in review.
No, this actually makes perfect sense to me because we did an episode a few back on Covenant Eyes, and we know shameware is a thing. We know that parents are installing software to monitor their kids' computers. What are you going to do if people are monitoring your computer, you're going to go to the device that they didn't think to put monitoring on. I honestly think there's probably a little like hacker mentality going on there.
You know, I know that Pornhub has a controversial past in terms of allowing user uploads that have sometimes resulted in non-consensual material being uploaded. And I know that they're owned by a new company that, you know, released a statement saying they're really committed to making Pornhub as a brand, like the leading voice in ethical online erotica. But what you just said makes me curious about how they're monitoring usage, right? Because you're right, it does make sense that the teenagers in the bedroom or the junior hires in their bedroom can access porn through their game consoles. And it does make sense that that's less of a consideration for parents, less of something that parents can lock down. I'm curious how the big companies monitor that, how they try to keep underage people off of their sites. That might be an interesting thing for us to dig into at some point.
Well, and this is another thing too. We don't want to come across as being pro or con Pornhub, because we do have, we've been trying to get them on the podcast for so long. We've got folks who are actively pursuing lawsuits against Pornhub who've been trying to get on and talk about that. But putting aside the legal issues, another thing that you sold me on when talking about, hey, why don't we do this episode, was some of the trends in Pornhub. And two of them I thought were very interesting. One was robots. I do like robots. And the other was therapy, including sex therapy.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that one of those you're going to have a very enthusiastic response to, and one of those I'm going to have a very negative response to, because, you know, I've talked about that on here before, the confusion that a lot of people have around what sex therapists do and what sex therapy is, and how, you know, I have to have some very delicate conversations with people calling about requesting services who think that I provide sexual services, not mental health. So I'm going to say I had some, you know, strong negative reactions to the realization that the search term sex therapy is up 55%. But the other thing I thought was interesting was that it's not just sex therapy. It's also massage therapy and physical therapy. And that really made me wonder about some of the experiences that friends of mine have had that are massage therapists, you know, where they'll have a client who acts inappropriately towards them or tries to touch them. And I wonder now if some of that blurred boundaries and some of that confusion around what it means to be a sex therapist or what the job of a massage therapist is might not be coming in part from some of these role play scenes that people are searching out online.
Well, now, wait a minute. You got me confused, because when you first said, oh yeah, sex therapy is a trending topic on Pornhub, I remember there was like, and probably I'm blurring this, so, you know, forgive me, but there was like a dad on Pornhub, right? It's like, dad helps the daughter fold clothes and does nothing. Or dad changes the TV channel and fixes the reception. There was like a whole series of like really wholesome videos, I remember.
Yeah, but that's not what this is. So this
can I tell you what I thought it was? Or do you want to jump into what it is? Knowing you, I thought it was like, you know, your role. Like, here's a sex therapist. And she's like, really? You need to unpack your childhood trauma. Or here's a sex therapist. And it's you in a messy bun, and you're like, man, I just got to cut 200 words out of this article so I can submit it to this journal. Or searching for a sex therapist, and it's like, okay, I guess I can get a snack, right? Sex therapist gets a snack in the 10 minutes between clients.
You know, it does sometimes feel like predicament play, trying to figure out if I have enough time for a bathroom break between sessions. That is definitely true. But in this case, I think that the search term is more of like the 70s song sexual healing. It's not really talking about actual sex therapists giving guidance, which we know is something that's happening on OnlyFans, because yeah, we've had that conversation. So, I mean, your idea makes sense. But when you actually go in and dig for some of those videos, it's not really educational content. And I mean, am I thrilled with that? No, but it makes sense. Anything that involves, the fancy word is somatic therapy, right? Any body work sort of thing has always been confused with sexual touch. So it makes sense. And maybe the corrective for that is for me to do exactly that. Maybe I need to start a Pornhub channel where I answer AMA sex therapy questions. What do you think?
I think you absolutely should. Also, I think that would only further confuse the friends of mine who often go, she's a sex therapist and you're okay with that? And I'm like, trust me, most of it's in her office being tired. So yeah, I think that would just add to the confusion. But you know, why is no one searching on hackers? Where did hackers fall on this list?
You know, I did not see hackers specifically. But sex machines was certainly there, and virtual reality was certainly there, and robot was certainly there. So I think that a lot of people are leaning into sex tech and into a lot of what our sex hacker innovator friends are doing. But I don't necessarily know that they're searching for hackers specifically these days, babe.
You know, that would be so much fun, though, right? Because wasn't there like an old trope about like, the guy comes over to fix your pipes or fix a piece of machinery, and then the woman seduces him. It could be the same thing. Like, I could get the video could start, and she's like, oh no, I shouldn't have clicked that phishing link. I better call, the gray-haired hacker. And then in comes the gray-haired hacker, and he's like, I'll help you, baby. I mean, this could work, right? You could see this could be a good setup.
And now we've got a combo channel idea, because I could be like, and pause. Watch how they negotiate what's about to happen. Pay close attention to the words that they use and the fact that he doesn't touch her until she has consented to touch. Okay, resume scene. We could totally do that.
I don't know. I think I would like to see some representation of my career, but maybe not. Is there anything changing in terms of ages, speaking of careers and whatnot, right? Like, is it all still like everyone wants someone who's like 18 years old, or is there any changes in that side of things?
You know, it's definitely changing, because there have been years in the past where, you know, some of the younger demographics have been very popular, the barely legals or the teen sort of categories. And that always brings up a lot of conversation in my world, a lot of reflection on, you know, the agency of young adults versus the sexualization of young adults. Yeah. But in this case, 2023 reversed that trend, and the most popular trend was actually mature and MILF. People are very much into the experienced, wiser partner these days.
All right. So that I'm all for. I'm all about that. But all right, back to the robots and androids. We know that getting those types of devices, I don't know, functioning, performing, paying for them. We've had lots of conversations just this year, and you, of course, visited the cybers. What
I visited the cybers?
All of it.
Cyberland. I was in the internet.
No, the cyber brothel you went to.
Yeah, I did visit a cyber brothel, which is a little bit, you know, smaller, more grounded than all of the cybers.
All the cybers is where you were. But talk to me about this as a rising trend, because I can't imagine many people could afford these things. So is it actual devices, or is it people like role playing? What is that?
So it's a little bit of both. They had a huge increase in things like android cosplay, robot role play, things like that. So we have people that are curious about these sex technologies that are wanting to explore them. And then there's also, you know, a decent amount of content out there these days that features people using sex robots or using sex machines. And I think that for folks that are curious about those technologies but can't necessarily afford to buy one, I mean, when we were at AeroFame, the cheapest sex machine that we saw was still $700-$800. And I remember at the time you were blown away by the affordability. I mean, usually these are in the thousands of dollars.
Yes.
For a top of the line sex robot, like the Real Doll X, the Harmony X, those are like, they can be $10,000. That's like buying a car. So I do think some of these searches are also people that, it's aspirational porn, right? You're watching scenes with the technology that you wish you owned.
Ah, okay. All right. That makes sense to me. And yeah, for those of you who want to like get the mood, get the vibes of hanging out at AeroFame with Stephanie and Wolf, it was me going, wow, that seems reasonably affordable. And Stephanie going, let me tell you about somatic therapy and what role this would
I suck the sexy out of everything in my sex therapy practice.
Yeah. Maybe you getting your own channel isn't a good idea. In the back to like the mature category and all those sort of things, right? So we do have how do I want to say this? We got people growing up, right? We got people who are getting older and older. And who have now basically been online for 20, 30 years. Is there any noticeable trends, I don't know, by generation, by age group, in terms of what is interesting, what isn't?
You know, one of the things that I thought was interesting was that mature is not just the most popular search term. It was consistent in several different categories. I mean, the boomers were searching for mature, but so were women in general. So were men in general. There was a lot more just inclusion, cosplay and muscular men and tattooed women and transgender porn. All of those were incredibly popular this year. And so what we're seeing is an expansion of people's ideas of what a sexy partner can be and a curiosity about different bodies, different age groups, different corporality, really, right? If we're talking about cartoons and hentai and sex machines, we're really getting into curiosity about whether my partner even needs a body at this point. And that is a fascinating evolution, I think. I do think it's important to point out, though, when we talk about mature, that our understanding of aging has changed a lot over the last 20, 30 years. My kid, our son, it has rediscovered and like a lot of people his age, loves the Golden Girls, right? But I remember watching the Golden Girls in the 80s, and they were portrayed as old women who had retired. And the fact that they had a sex life at all was amusing. It was kind of made them new and novel that any of them had boyfriends, much less that one of them would be like, quote unquote, promiscuous for the time. But I was curious a couple months ago about like how old were the Golden Girls on the show and what would that be now? And if we were to recast the Golden Girls today, we would be casting people like Jennifer Lopez and Jennifer Aniston and like Kate Hudson. I mean, our understanding of what it means to be mature has completely shifted just between when the Gen X were junior high to when our kids were in junior high to us all being adults together now. And I think that's a really important thing to note is, you know, when we talk about mature, when we talk about MILF or DILF, people are not picturing like their grandparents. They're picturing themselves in a lot of ways.
So people mid-40s to mid-50s.
In a lot of ways. I mean, if you look at the Golden Girls, the oldest one on the show was 62, and most of them were in their mid-50s. So we're talking about people that we still point to as sex symbols today, who, if they had been famous 40 years ago, would have been cast as these like elderly retirees. And I think that that shift in our understanding of aging is really important to understanding what it means to think about the fact that people are searching out mature performers and mature porn.
Absolutely. The other thing you were saying in there around non-corporeal fantasies has me wondering, right? So, like, you and I did some training on furries. And, well, you took the training. I sat in being very curious to figure out what was going on. And one of the things I remembered was this idea of a spider bite. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, so that is a term that some of our podcast friends over at the Off the Cuffs podcast use. They ask all of their guests, what was your radioactive spider bite into kink?
And what age do people generally have this radioactive spider bite?
So we don't have a definitive number. But what our research currently tells us is that most kinky adults can look back on a time in their childhood and, as adults with adult eyes, adult language, adult understanding, go, oh, yep, that was it. That was my moment. And when researchers ask this question, a lot of the times, a solid plurality of people say that that moment happened around age 10 or maybe a little bit before. I would say the 8 to 12 range is where the spider bite tends to be noticed. And I'm not talking about trauma. I'm not talking about abuse. I'm talking about, and we've you know, touched on this in other episodes, playground games, interactions with peers, watching a movie or reading a book, and they notice a response in them that 20 years later, as adults, they go, oh, yeah, I know what that response was now. I know what that means. That was the moment when.
So what I think is fascinating about that is when we're listening to this training on the furry fandom, one of the things that a lot of folks came back to was Robin Hood, right? That with that the foxy Robin Hood and the Maid Marian and whatnot. And most of those folks were on average 23 to 27 years of age. I think like 9 and 10 are 30 or younger. 9 out of 10 are 30 or younger. So let's take 27 years old. At 27 years old, how old would they have been when the DVD version of Robin Hood hit the streets? Do you want to guess?
I don't know. In my video store days, I was still slinging VHS.
So the VHS version came out in 1984. That doesn't count. Here's what's interesting. The DVD version of Robin Hood came out in 2006, when the average age of a furry would have been 10.
Interesting.
Kind of weird, huh?
And now we see an entire generation where their top category is cosplay, and cartoon rounds out the top five. So, yeah, I mean, we can see maybe some cultural generational spider bites happening there for sure.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about when you were saying like cosplay. And obviously a lot of the cosplayers, back to sex therapists, from what I've heard from my friends who cosplay, they don't particularly like to be overly sexualized. They certainly don't want to be touched. They certainly don't want to be stared at. But there is a degree of attractiveness in many of the cosplayers. And you know, they are oftentimes representing characters that for this generation would have been in popular media when they're 10, 11, 12 years old. It's really intriguing. There's something in there, and I can't quite put my finger on it, but it's an intriguing pattern nonetheless.
So for Justin Lay Miller and all of my other sexual sociology friends, that could be a really fun study to do. And yeah, I agree. There is a difference between cosplay and sexy role play. I love it when we take our kids to events, to conferences, not conferences, but to conventions, because they'll have signs up, right? Cosplay is not consent. And I love that. And I think that ties into those other categories too, right? Massage therapy is not consent. Sex therapy is not consent. So we clearly have that fantasy element that porn is meant to be. Porn is meant to be fantasy. Porn is meant to be an exploration of an idea, not an instruction manual. But I do agree with you. It's really interesting to think about how popular cosplay and costumes and cartoons are for the Gen Z crowd, for sure.
Absolutely. The other thing I thought that hit me when you were sharing some of this in the show notes, and I just thought it was rather wholesome, right? Back to like, dad fixes the sink type wholesomeness, was FFM being in the list of things, right? Because like, you know, I've got a background in healthcare. So I'm like, oh, that makes sense. Like federally facilitated marketplaces. And as we got this entire generation that are, you know, coming up and they're like, man, my fantasy would be to have my own property someday. This idea that my fantasy is to have good health insurance, right? Like you can imagine like that playing out. They're like, oh yeah, you're fine. We checked you out. Here's some pills. I'm like, how much do you pay? And they're like, you don't owe anything. It's on us. And they're like, what? I don't owe any money. And then they walk out with their bag of medicine and they're all healthy. I think that's fantastic.
So you're picturing like the naughty nurse trope, but with a zero balance due at the end?
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, congratulations, it's all from the ACA, right? What is it, Affordable Care Act?
You know how sometimes something means one thing in your world and another thing in my world?
Yes.
Like when I talk about CBT versus when you talk about CBT, sometimes, you know, they mean different things.
Sure.
Okay, FFM in this case has nothing to do with healthcare, baby.
Are you sure? Because that's what it means.
I'm pretty sure. It also means female, female, male. Which would be a threesome where the girls interact with each other and the girls interact with the guy. So while I think that, you know, the cosplay element of this year's trends and the mature element of this year's trends might lend itself to your scenario, that's not actually what the trending FFM refers to.
Oh, man, I was really excited. I'm like, congratulations, healthcare. No, that's not it.
I mean, you know, it probably will be. If we put it out in the ether, somebody next year is going to be all over it.
Well, hey, wait a minute. How? Okay. Now I'm doing like the code breaker thing in my mind. Like FFM, FMF, MFF. Does the order matter?
Yeah, it actually does. So.
Really?
So we already said FFM means that the two women involved play with each other and with the guy. An FMF means that the two women play with the guy, but not with each other.
Oh.
And the same is true if you reverse the genders, if you get MMF or MFM.
Okay. I've got one more question about it.
Yeah.
Last question, I promise. I thought we were moving away from like the female male thing. I thought like it was like everyone wants bottles of gender fluid these days, right? So why wouldn't it be woman, man, woman? Why the F's and the M?
Here's the thing about online erotica. Here's the thing about porn. It's not necessarily always super inclusive. I mean, I talk a lot about the eroticization of technology and how the minute a new technology comes out, it's immediately pornified. Mm-hmm. But while the adult world is really innovative in that respect, it's often really slow in sort of cultural developments. And, you know, we still have a whole bunch of problematic categories online. We still have categories that divide people up by their race or by their age. And there are, you know, voices in the adult community that are pushing back on that because that does create inequalities. That does create hierarchies of preference that directly impact performers' pay. So, I mean, some of the other more popular search terms this year were things like ebony, which, you know, makes me a little uncomfortable. I don't know about you, but there are Black adult performers who don't like that, who don't want to be segregated off, relegated into the special category only for Black performers. They want to be mainstreamed. They don't want to be in a bubble. And so, you know, I think that the F and the M's, as opposed to something more gender affirming or inclusive, is just another example of the ways in which porn can be really innovative in some respects, with, you know, the interactive porn and the sex robots that we've been talking about, and some ways in which it can still be pretty regressive.
You know, when you say Ebony, it reminds me of something that, like, you would have heard in the 70s, right? It's like, I don't necessarily have a very modern view of that, but back to the 70s and back to some of the history of all this material, you know, it was a very masculine driven industry. Is that still the case? Like, do we have any statistics in terms of men versus women on these sites?
In terms of performers, in terms of producers, in terms of viewers, what are you thinking?
Sure, whatever you got, hit me.
Well, you know, the year in review that Pornhub puts out doesn't necessarily break it down by producers. But one of the things that I thought was really interesting was that globally, 36% of their visitors were women. And I think that that is really interesting. For one, I would have expected it to be a little bit higher. But I also think that some of the people, you know, listening to our conversation might be surprised that it's that high. And I think that that is a really great thing, because it's showing that more women are sort of taking control of their own pleasure, that they are exploring their own erotic identities, that they are seeking out content that in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, they would have been invited to produce, but never to consume. Lots of people have lots of opinions about porn, and porn is an ongoing debate. I just recently read this great, huge longitudinal study that looked at what do we know about the effects of porn after 50 years of studying it. And what they basically said is, well, what we know is that we haven't been asking the right questions and we need more research. But a lot of the concerns that people have about viewing pornography or reading online erotica, they were able to debunk. They were able to kind of poke holes in the research or poke holes in those theories. And so I love the fact that more women are consuming online erotica wherever they're getting it, whether it's Pornhub or Dipsy or Rosy or Adult Time or any of the other sources. I'm not trying to tell people they need to go to one site. I just think it's great that more women are feeling more comfortable seeking out sexy content at all.
And I would love to know the stats of those other sites you mentioned, because there may be gender preferences in which site you go to.
That would be a fun thing for us to research and do an episode about.
So there, we've had three different things that we could talk about in the future. But for right now, is there any final thoughts you want to share with us about this and how it's going to inform intimacy and technology and the way we think about these things? And, you know, the way that I'm assuming you have conversations with your clients, how we think about erotic content and technology heading into 2024.
You know, that's a really big question. And mostly I just wanted to tell you a fun fact that I'm very proud of.
Oh, what's that?
What state do we live in?
Michigan?
Uh-huh. And where do I work?
In the office around the corner from me.
Which is located in?
A city in Michigan.
And what do I specialize in?
You specialize in gender relationship diversity, like kink and bondage and those sort of things.
Yeah. And guess what the top search term for Michigan was in 2023?
Oh, tell me it was bondage just for you.
It was bondage. You're welcome, Michigan.
Well, I think you know, between sex therapy and bondage, you're clearly having an impact in this world. So kudos.
I can't prove it, but I'm going to own it. I have decided I am the reason why that bondage is Michigan's number one search term.
Well, we all wanted to put a dent in the universe somehow in some way. And I think this might be one.
And with that, I think we have picked apart all of this fascinating data for 2023. And I can't wait to talk about next year's with you two.
Fair enough. So thanks for tuning in to Securing Sexuality, your source of information you need to protect yourself and your relationships.
Securing Sexuality is brought to you by the Bound Together Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit. From the bedroom to the cloud, we're here to help you navigate safe sex in a digital age.
Be sure to check out our website, securingsexuality.com, for links to information about the topics we've discussed here today, as well as our live events.
And join us again for more fascinating conversations about the intersection of sexuality and technology. Have a great week!